Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And my guest today is Anna, and she is going to share her personal journey with Lyme and the journey of her four children. I mean, it's tough enough to battle ourselves and then to have to become the own your own advocate for your whole family, a family of four kids. I just can't even fathom that. And you know, like many others that go through this journey, we truly want to find some way to spread our voices and get our voices heard and share the knowledge that we had to learn the hard way. And so from this journey of hers and her children, she is the author of Ultra Parent Thinking. And it's, you know, not necessarily a book that talks about Lyme, but if we have Lyme, we know what it's talking about, right? It's just an overall guide for anything probably that any of your children may or may not be going through. So I'm happy that, you know, she wrote this book, that she's trying to get the word out. And I'm just super excited to have her on my show and have her share the journey and all the stuff. So welcome, Anna. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Tanya. I'm so happy to be here. So excited.
Yes, it really is. You know, it's a tough topic to talk about, but I really can have fun with it because it's just, we need to remind ourselves we're being vulnerable and talking about this because all we want to do is help those that are still battling or help those that are trying to understand what their loved one is going through this journey, because a lot of it doesn't make sense, right? We're all over the board with our symptoms and the doctors are telling us, well, it's probably all in your head. And then your loved one is thinking, gosh, it really is all in your head. You know, so we just want to share all the stuff. And I wouldn't have a show if it wasn't for guests like you to come on and just be vulnerable and share with me. So I'm excited to dive all into it.
Awesome.
So where do we start? Do we want to start with you or, yeah, I don't even know.
Okay, sure. Well, the way I say it is the middle is the start in this case. Like so many of your audience members, maybe all of your audience members who have Lyme, they didn't know what they were in for until they got pretty far down the Lyme road. So I do have four kids. My husband and I had four kids very close in age. Within 5.5 years, we had four children. When we only had three, I took them to a pediatrician, and I was concerned that at least two of them were becoming autistic, and they had some very significant symptoms. For example, I'll just go a little bit into that. For example, one of my sons, he had very severe OCD. In fact, as an example, I timed it one time how long it took me just to hand him a bowl of peaches that he was going to eat as a snack. Just to hand the bowl to his little fingers took 20 minutes because he wanted me to hand the bowl to him just right so that his fingers would touch the bowl at a certain moment. He wanted the right positioning of the bowl, just very, very specific. But he was too young to say, hey, mom, I want you to put three fingers on the bowl here. I want my thumb to touch the bowl at this moment. You know, it's that some, you know, crazy stuff. So that's just an example. He had very severe OCD. And when we went
Talk about severe.
It was quite severe. We'd go to the grocery store and he wouldn't be happy with how, or he wouldn't be okay with how quickly we'd go through the grocery store line. Even if we weren't going that fast, he would scream do it again. He wanted to go back through that grocery store line again, which of course is impossible when you've got a line behind you and you just don't, you know, you can't do that. So anyways, he had severe OCD. He was obsessed with my Vitamix blender and the vacuum. So every day he wanted to play with the blender. It was off, it was unplugged, but he wanted possession of that blender. He would lose his speech from time to time. He would just lose the ability to speak. He'd be speaking the day before, and then he would try to talk and he couldn't speak. He had horrific meltdowns, especially when his blood sugar would drop. He was not potty trainable. His cognitive processing was very slow, his eye tracking slow, on and on and on. So I thought, this is where this kid is going. I thought, this kid is developing autism. And his brother also had some significant symptoms as well. His brother was way beyond shy. When he would be met with people, he would just drop his head and flutter his fingers. And he had a number of other symptoms also that told me, man, I think he's somewhere on the autism spectrum here. Maybe not full-blown autism, but that's where we're headed. And he also had a sister, an older sister. My daughter also had aggression, some pretty extreme aggression, which now I can say is most likely Lyme rage. And we can talk about that.
Yeah.
She had aggression. She was extroverted. She was very outgoing and loved new experiences, loved people, but she was very rough the way she would play and crash into people. And she had some very severe sensory issues, which I also attribute to Lyme. So those are just some of the symptoms. I could go on and on and on and on and on, you know, about the symptoms.
Right. There is no stop in the symptoms, but it really is, you know, three kids, all different symptoms. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, mm-hmm. it's really different. Sad because unfortunately I never had children. I've been around them a lot most of my life. Right. But even like you just said, being in the grocery store, if you happen to stop to talk to somebody, I can't tell you how many, I'm sure hundreds of times they had, you know, their child next to them, no taller than up to their knee, that is just beyond shy, won't look, hide behind their mom. And, you know, it really just makes you wonder how many people really battle with this that we don't even know.
Mm-hmm. One of the things their physician told me, and we can go into this as well. One of the things that their physician who was helpful told me was that when you have just one little symptom, say, for example, the child is just shy, it's not really a red flag, but when you have somebody who is very shy, plus their tongue is coated with white fungus, as my son's was, they have those big bags under their eyes. I have them too, but they have those dark circles or the bags under their eyes. And then they also have this learning disability. And they have some allergies. And you just, you know, when you put all those little symptoms in a line, you say, okay, there's something wrong with their immune system. There's something that they've been overtaxed with that their body isn't able to process and get rid of. Maybe they were bitten by something, whether you saw it or not. In the case of my kids, I didn't see a tick ever on my kids. So anyways, I took these three kids, I only had three at the time, into the pediatrician's office, and I was armed by that point with a book. This was a book on autism. And I asked the pediatrician, why do all three of my kids have symptoms that are in this book? And she was not happy. She was not happy with me. You know, she wanted to just get on with their well checks. It was for my daughter initially. Get on with that well check, move on to the next kid, get your free book. You know, everybody smiles and says thanks. But instead, she rolled her eyes and she told me that I couldn't possibly accurately assess these children because after all, you know, I wasn't a physician. And she told me that what I needed to do was to find a psychologist who could help me better parent them. Because when kids are little, they when they struggle, they become behavior problems. I mean, my kids, for many people, just seemed like cute brats, really.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of them are. They look like cute little brats that run around out there.
That's it. Yes. But the reality is, kids are supposed to be these sturdy, happy, healthy, grungy kids, getting in the dirt, getting out of the dirt, you know, playing in the leaves and having fun outside in the grass and all. They're supposed to be able to take on life, and every birthday they get stronger. Mine were so idiosyncratic in their symptoms, and they were getting worse. So I scooped up, as I say in the book, I scooped up my three children mess, and I said goodbye to that pediatrician. And I'm telling you, Tanya, looking back, I do not have any animosity toward that woman, because I think I needed to have her in my path at that time. Had she said, I can help you a little bit. I can help you at least for a year and help you get your kids a little bit better, a little bit. I would have stayed with her, and my kids would have been just strung along in a system that didn't know what to do with my kids, quite frankly. And instead, I said goodbye to her. I finally, after so many pediatricians too, because we moved because of my husband's job, we moved all over the place and we saw so many pediatricians. I finally could recognize, oh, she's not going to help my kids. And I took, the kids to a physician who specialized in autism, but that guy also specialized in Lyme. He was a Lyme literate physician. Yes. And we stayed with him for 13 years, and we'd still be with him, except that his license was taken away from him because he was helping kids like mine. That is the only reason he has it, had his license taken away. And the governing board, yes, the same governing board who advised protocols that hurt my kids, the same board then took his license away for helping my kids, kids like mine. So that's the background. Yeah.
Yeah, I have so much I want to say on that. Okay. I do want to back up just a couple seconds, you know, because I know my listeners, they hear me say it a lot, that Lyme truly was a blessing in my life. I didn't know it at the time. And that was just a perfect example of what you said, Anna. Even though we really wanted to probably strangle that pediatrician that you were just talking about, she was your blessing because she could have prolonged the inevitable, right? Sent you down more rabbit holes that we knew weren't going to work anyways. And so it's just really important to try to find those many blessings along our journey, because there really are many, especially when it's said and done. We can really pick up on them easier for sure. And then, you're talking about a doctor who loses their license and something is wrong with that, you know, and it kind of comes to how I'm sitting here thinking whether I want to say something and I think that I won't, you know, I try to leave this open-ended, you know, for everybody. We all have different religions. We all have different political beliefs. We all have that, but that doesn't mean anything different, right? We're all here in this Lyme circle together. We're all part of a village trying to get through this journey, but it really is just sad at these doctors that, for one, they're so hard to find. You know, a good one to treat you. And then we find one that we trust, and then they can no longer treat us because they're actually making us well, right? So what's going on? Is it not giving enough money to Big Pharma? Is it not, you know, and that's kind of the road I don't want to dive down, but we get it. It's sad. It's not okay. And then even the flip side of that, you know, during my journey of going 7 years from doctor to doctor, I was really angry at these doctors because I basically was gaslit. Some of them would do a few tests, and if all those came out okay, then, you know, send me on my way with, you know, go see a psychiatrist. But looking back, to become a doctor, right, is there like a chapter of nutrition in all of the books that you have to study, you know, if that at all, right? And so I think a lot of them, yeah, I need to give them a little bit of grace with the fact that they may not have tools in their toolbox, you know, and so you can't blame them. But the field that they're in, they need to be empathetic and they need to be trusting of their patients with what their patients are telling them. And then by all means, if I can't help you or if they can't help you, then send them somewhere else. Don't just gaslight them because you don't know what the problem is. You obviously don't have that tool in your toolbox. Maybe they didn't teach it to you in medical school. And so I don't always want to dog on all the conventional doctors, but for the most part, yeah, I want to strangle a lot of them. But it is sad, and that is heartbreaking that your doctor, after 13 years, we talk about this a lot, you know, it's in documentaries that are out there available for people to watch on Lyme and why these doctors lose their licenses, and it's not okay. And that's why what we do, just spreading the word and advocating more for Lyme disease is so, so important.
Yeah, agreed. Looking at the situation now, I've classified people into three categories, three levels. One, level one, for example, when someone gets their Lyme diagnosis, if I think of our audience here, they get the diagnosis and they're overwhelmed. They couldn't even imagine being an advocate someday, like what you are. Instead, they're still struggling so much and they don't understand, and it's a very risky time and they fall for things very easily. People try to help, they're well-meaning, but it's a really fumbly, uneasy time. And all they want to do is get back to the way they used to be. And then level two is where you're still falling for some things, but you're a lot wiser at that point. So if you're taking care of somebody, whether they're a child or not, it doesn't matter what the age is. When they're caring for somebody at level two, they might find, oh, this worked for my person, so everybody should do this. We found something that worked, right? Yeah. We found the diet that worked for this person. Everybody should just go on this same diet, or this is the medication, this is the antibiotic, or this is the herbal, or this is the whatever, this is the rife, or whatever worked for that person. I want to tell the world, I want everybody to be on that. And every time they step away from their person and they want to become a bigger advocate in the Lyme community, for example, their person regresses and they have to go, you know, help them a lot. Level three is the level where you can still fall for things, but you get up really fast. You can identify patterns so much better, and you can step away from your person to work on some things of your own, and that person's going to be okay. And if they regress, you can help them again pretty quickly. So what does that have to do with the people who are helping us, the physicians rather? I think physicians also fall into those categories. I don't believe in this idea that people are inherently evil. I think people are naturally good and innocent. And I think that people who go into the medical profession, for example, they must really want to help people. And they might have some skills, some particular skills in those areas, and they're prompted to go into that field. But I think Tanya, sometimes they get stuck in those levels, just like we as patients, Lyme patients, get stuck in those levels, and we don't know how to move to the next one and advance all the way to the third eventually. There are so many physicians looking back who saw my kids who were in level two. I thought they were a level three, but they were a level two. Nothing wrong with them, but they didn't really know how to help them. For example, there was one family doctor we had a long time ago. I really liked him as his personality was so likable. He was a good guy. And he had a child who had some conditions in the autism world. And he gave some pretty poor advice, but I thought it was good advice. We were planning a trip. My husband and my kids and I, we had three kids at the time. I think it was three. We were planning a trip out of country, and he advised go off that gluten-free diet, eat the indigenous food, enjoy yourself, because, and I'm sure your audience has heard this many times, it's better for you in public to eat that food you don't typically eat at home, you know, go off your diet because of the environment you're in. That's going to outweigh the happiness you're going to have is going to outweigh the negatives you're going to get from that food. So be gluten-free at home. But when you go out to dinner, don't make a big deal about it. Just eat the food because you're going to be so happy. You're going to feel well for that reason. Well, this doctor was a level two, wonderful, wonderful person. And I'm sure a good doctor in many ways, but we ate the indigenous food. And my daughter was so strung out from the opiate effect of the gluten. And she was so messed up from the corn, the gluten, the dairy, the fresh cheeses we ate there, that she couldn't sleep. She couldn't function. And the pivotal point from that trip, the one I remember, is she was just so, really, she was just strung out, like she was high, and she was hyperactive and aggressive. She got up on this little ledge, this little concrete ledge, and she was about to go head first down a stairwell. I happened to be there. I grabbed her shirt. So I pulled her back. It was only her hips. Her hips were about going over, but I pulled her back down. But had I not been there at that moment, that little girl who knows what would have happened. And I thought, you know, at the time it was just scary as heck, but that's kind of what we were dealing with back then. And I look back now at that example, and I think, you know, the physician who said, eat that indigenous food, I think he was a level two. And I think I, as my daughter's advocate, needed to be smarter. I needed to be smarter in order to know what advice to take and not to take. And that's one of the things that I stress in Ultra Parent Thinking in my book. We caretakers, whether you're a parent or not, if you're taking care of somebody who has Lyme, for example, it's not enough just to be there as an empathetic listener and to just help with the, I don't know, the day-to-day things. You've got to be a fortified person. You've got to go beyond, just like that Lyme is, well, like your podcast, that Lyme and Beyond, just like that Lyme is just so strong, what it can do. We caretakers need to also be like that. So the physician my children ended up with was definitely a level three, and he saved their lives. He, somewhere in early in their journey, tested for Lyme. He said, let's test for tick-borne illness. Let's test for Lyme. I don't remember how I said it. And I said, what's that? I had no idea what that was. And he said, well, you can get this from ticks. And he explained what else you could get it from. He handed me a brochure and he talked about co-infections. I thought, what the heck is that now, you know? And we went down the Lyme path then. Immediately, I told family and a few friends, we have Lyme. You should see if you have Lyme. You know, I told everybody. What I found out was that you're not supposed to tell anybody, it seems. No, that's not true. I'm saying, I'm being sarcastic.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I know.
Lived on blog. Yeah. And I never saw a tick bite on anybody. I had Lyme. My husband had Lyme. I passed on that Lyme to my babies. Had no idea. I had chronic fatigue for at least 30 years, but I checked my thyroid a couple times and it wasn't that. And I knew that I was more tired than other people. It was very strange, but I thought, well, you know, that's who I am. That's just the way it is.
We're all different, right?
We're all different. And the doctors always told me I was fine anyway. I would take an hour long nap and still have to get to bed 9 to 9:30 as an adult. And I was always tired. I couldn't sleep. I had trouble falling asleep. I had trouble staying asleep, but it didn't occur to me that it could be insomnia. I don't think I had that word in my vocabulary back then. And I had some other issues as well, some brain fog. Oh yeah. And then I had some puffiness and some digestive, and it just kept going, but I had no idea. I thought I was a very healthy person. And when I had my kids and they then had to have a different diet, we had to get the chemicals out of their food. We had to change the pans, get rid of all the Teflon that worked so well for eggs. We had to go to stainless steel, And when we changed our lifestyle severely and improved their immune system, thanks to that physician, and detoxed a couple, not all of them, but did work on that, went through Lyme treatment as well. When we did that, I implemented things in my health protocol too. I stopped eating anything with red food coloring in. That was the first, yes. Very first step we did. Yes. And my gosh, Tanya, I could fall asleep. Just like that, I could fall asleep like a normal person. When I stopped eating, for me, it was grains. When I stopped eating grains and dairy also, when I stopped eating that, wow, I had energy. So then I thought, okay, well, we don't have money for me to see a doctor. We don't have money for my husband to see a doctor because we're pumping all our money into out of pocket for the kids. What if I implement some of the things that my kids are doing just discretionarily according to what I wanted to do, and my Lyme got better and I became a more functional human being, So that's a little bit about some of the background for the Lyme for us.
Wow. Yeah, so much. And that's, I mean, what a great mom, right? We're always supposed to put our children first. And that's the beauty of, being able to have guests on here, share their journey, share things that worked for them. Because, so you've got three different kids, right? They probably took different things to help eradicate their Lyme. And so you couldn't just, be that level two person, as you say, which, by the way, I love those three levels you walked us through. I can resonate so well with them. But you can't be that level two. And because this worked for them, it's going to work for you, right? But at least you have the tools in your toolbox to... let me try this. Let me see if this is a right fit for me. And I say too that if you are, unfortunately not able to treat with a doctor, I get it. They're expensive because the ones that can help us, unfortunately, most of the time don't take insurance, and we have to pay out of pocket for it. And so we can try to, order different supplements and implement different things in our life. And if you have spent money on a specific supplement that you know right away is not your ticket, please, please, please don't throw it away, because that might be just what your body needs in 6 months from now, or in 3 months from now, or in 9 months from now. Because I know that dreaded feeling when you're like, okay, am I going to spend this money? What if it doesn't work? And you take it and your symptoms get worse, or just whatever the reason is, it's not your ticket at the moment. Don't feel defeated, because it might be the ticket you need in a few months down the road. So I always like to say that, because I know how heartbreaking it is, to actually have to spend money and then have it not work. And it just sits there in your cupboard. And I'm like, oh gosh, there goes all that money. I oftentimes on my Lyme and Beyond with Tanya Facebook page, I oftentimes wonder, gosh, I should start like this thread of gifting supplements to people. I don't know. It'd probably be a whole big thing, right? But I just don't want people to think it's money going to waste. So don't give up on them yet. But no, that's just amazing. In the fact that you brought up the red 40, you know, dye. It is in everything. And I look back, that triggered me when I was thinking years ago about how healthy I thought I was eating, right? But didn't really know what I was eating. High fructose corn syrup was the big thing that triggered in my mind. And it was in my darn ketchup. Are you kidding me? You know? So it is. It's sad and it's scary. But I have heard story after story from parents that take their kids off of these dyes and the food colorings and high fructose corn syrup. And, you know, outside of even lime, that, you know, I'm not even saying that they have lime, but just how much their lives change from it. It's, it tells you right there, it's just toxicity that you're putting into your kids' body when you give them that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you'll see ADHD go down. You'll see them being able to sleep.
Yeah, they can think. Yeah, and I was looking through something. I was reading an article the other day, and there were some statistics about all sorts of things, you know, diabetes, autism, sleep apnea, just a whole bunch of random things from years ago, decades ago versus now. And I mean, we're talking an increase of 1,000% in a lot of these. Well, back then, so many of them, like our grandparents and stuff, they grew their own food. They, you know what I mean? Yeah. So what does that tell you? I mean, it's not, you know, some people think that many of us that look outside the box along this journey are kind of what, conspiracy theorists or something. Is that the right word? I'm not even sure if I'm using it right, but you know what I mean? And it's look at the figures. It's there. It's telling us something, you know? So that is crazy. Oh my goodness. So, okay. So these are your three children. And you did a lot of, can you tell us some of the detox things that you did at home?
Yeah. Well, for that, we actually went through a pharmacy, Lee Silsby. It's out on the East Coast. They're a compounding pharmacy and they're, it's, I don't know if they're the only one left in the United States or one of the few, I know they're one of the few true compounding pharmacies left. They can make pretty much anything that you would want. So they actually did EDTA and DMSA. I think that's what it's called. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. It's been a long time. But my two boys went through that. Yeah. But my girls didn't go through a direct heavy metal detox, but the boys were bad enough that's what their bodies needed at that time. And as soon as my older son, for example, when he got far enough along in his detox, he ended up being able to write his name. He stopped breaking crayons. You know, I mean, he was okay with drawing something then. And he was 3 to 5 years old at that time. We also did glutathione, a lot of glutathione, all four of them. I take glutathione as well.
That's amazing. Our bodies need that, right? We need it. Yeah. And then it can also detoxify. It's our major master antioxidant.
Yes. It's a big deal. Yes. And let's see, all of them did B12 also, big time on B12. That helped a lot. So those are some of the things. And then just a very big list of supplements over the years. So everything from oregano oil, curcumin, I do turmeric. Lately, three of my kids are actively being seen in the Bay Area for Lyme. They go to Dr. Harris's group. It's Gordon Medical now. So. Yeah. So they're on herbals right now. My daughter was on antibiotics for a number of years, and I was encouraged by her physician, let's try to get her off of that. And I was so I was so reluctant to do that because I thought, well, she's doing so well on antibiotics. You know, Bactrim was one of them. She's doing so well. I don't want to see what it's going to be like if I take her off of it. You know, I was so hesitant to take her off, but she doesn't take antibiotics anymore. She's doing herbals right now as well. It's the Makewell products right now.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Lots that of is magnesium. Scary, right? Like you're their advocate. Yeah. You have to tell them how to treat and what to do. And you, we know that, you know, again, time and place for everything, and antibiotics work for a lot of people, right? I don't think it should be our first choice by any means because of the damage it can do to our gut lining and all of that stuff. But so here you have your daughter on antibiotics that
right.
I'm sure in the back of your mind, you're not real happy about it,
right?
But she's doing well. Do I want to disrupt this? Yeah. Do I want to? So, you know, again, those really tough decisions that, you know, as a mom or a caregiver or whatever that you have to make for them are hard.
They are. And one of the things I say in my book is that it really doesn't matter if you're parent or caregiver. When you are in charge of someone else's health like that, even if the physician or whoever the professional is, that's how I say it in my book. I just call it a professional because you might go to a psychologist, psychiatrist, clergyman. You might go to a cranial sacral therapist, a doctor, etc. You have so many people. But I just say that professional, when you go to that professional and that professional says, give your person this, or have your person eat this, not that, or go try this procedure. What I emphasize is we as the caretakers of that person, we have to shoulder that responsibility. If we educate ourselves, I mean, we know this, huh? If we educate ourselves, we'll be able to make some decently sound decisions when it comes to those protocols. So we can say, well, I know somebody who did that, and these were the results. Or I read, or I watched several podcasts now where people were talking about this, and this is, you know, when you educate yourself, you can make those decisions a little bit easier. You don't ever in this Lyme journey, you don't ever want to hand over your person completely to someone else and say, now you go fix that person. Because then whatever that person, that professional thinks is the right thing to do, they will prescribe or they will advise. You as a caretaker, you can be the secret sauce in that person getting well. What you bring to that person's life is so critical. And that professional is really like a tool to be used as well. And if you have that approach, you educate yourself well. And it starts by observing really well, by the way. You have to observe first, and then you can educate yourself really well about the protocols and what your person might need. Then you can dedicatedly help that person. And then if you take responsibility for whatever diet that professional advised or whatever pill that professional said to take or whatever protocol, then you will feel like you have some management, some control over this situation too. And you won't be taking such high risks, I think. So for example, when my kid's physician said, I would recommend a gluten-free, casein-free, soy-free diet for your kids. Not once in our journey over the years did I say, well, he put my kids on this, you know. Instead, I said, this was my choice to do. He gave me a recommendation. I decided that my kids were going to go on this. So as a caretaker, I really think it's important for us to as long as we see ourselves as advocates, to also shoulder some responsibility in what goes on with our person. And we're going to make much better decisions. They're going to get better faster. And then we will not be stuck in that level two. We won't be stuck in level one or two. Right. So I have found also that when people are stuck in that level two, I found myself doing this. When I was stuck in level two, I wanted to point out all the people who were not helping my kid, all the professionals who couldn't help my kid. And I was kind of stuck there mentally. But then eventually, and with the help of my husband, eventually I had to come to terms with that and say, okay, those people are not spending time thinking about my kids. Why am I wasting my time and energy that should be spent toward helping my kids? Why am I wasting my time and energy in talking about them? What if I put that to better use, you know, a more proactive, optimistic view, and you kind of shed some of that. And when you do that, you find that even if you come across five people, for example, who are not understanding your journey and who are kind of working against you, whether they're close to you or far, whatever, you hear five examples, you're going to hear one who does get it, who is listening to you. Cling to those kinds of people and ignore those five to one, ignore those five people who are in your way, because the quality of that one who is on your side is going to by far outweigh the quantity of those five who are trying to hold you back. And that's why that's why we have these these podcasts. That's why we have these things.
Yeah, no, everything you just said was just so beautifully said. And it is, you know, these tools that we gain for our toolbox over the journey, they're powerful, right? It's things that we can fall back on. It's things that we can learn about, because who wants to hand over a child to a stranger? Any doctor, right? You have to, it's like, people that, you know, have children, they have their first child, they're out there looking for a daycare. That's in a sense what you're doing, right? But you're going to do some research and have a hand in it as well. You're not just going to drop them off. I'm not sure who they are, but they have a license, right? They're good. They'll take care of my kids. If your kids come home and you're getting some negative feedback, you need to investigate what's going on here when I'm not, you know, with you. Same thing with a doctor. You know, it's our job as, you know, as a caretaker in whatever role that is, to advocate for the person going through their journey, because a lot of times they can't, whether they're too young, right? They can't, they don't know, whether they have brain fog so bad they don't know their name, like that was me, right? For many reasons, we have to step into that role. And then, yes, also, you know, take some accountability for it. And that doesn't mean we're not going to make a mistake. You know, we're not perfect. There's not a line book journey treatment 101 for anyone. You know, we learn along the way. And, you know, it's, and I'm glad you brought this, because I do want to touch on this a little bit before we end, because I think it's so important. I know that I, you know, talk a lot to Lyme people every day, and I talk about the toxicity in our world, right? Environmental toxins, food toxins, people are toxic. They can be, whether they're your relatives or not, they can be. And it's hard as I know it is, sometimes you have to cut out all toxicity in order to fully heal and get well. And so what I want to talk with you, Anna, is how, when you're treating your children, right? It's one thing if we're just treating ourselves. When you're treating your children with Lyme disease and doing it, a lot of it, kind of outside the box, right? What are these pills you're taking? What is this that you're giving them? There's got to be a lot of judgment. There's got to be a lot of judgment from friends, families, you know, the kids' parents that they go to school with, whatever it is. And you know, that is hard, one, because first of all, nobody likes to be judged for doing something or being talked about for possibly doing something wrong or harming their children, right? I know that we shouldn't care what other people think of us, but I think it's human nature. We kind of do, right? So how do you, when we don't even know ourselves, am I doing the right thing, right? We're, you know, whether you're trusting God or trusting your gut or whoever it is that you're putting your faith in, you feel that you are doing the right thing at the moment and the best thing that you can do for your child. And so how do you deal with that backlash that you, I'm assuming you probably got along this journey from friends or neighbors or just anyone? How did that look like in your journey?
Yeah, for sure, Tanya. Yes. And I think it's going to happen to everybody, even if it's at a little amount, it's going to happen to everybody sooner or later. You're going to have to justify why on earth you're doing these really wacko things, whether it's simply refusing to eat something that disagrees with you or the actual protocols that you're doing. It was a long, hard journey for me with that one. Because I tell you, I really thought before I had kids, I thought I really knew how a kid should be raised. In my profession, I worked with children for 9 years before I had my own. I had babysat a lot as a kid, so I understood kids. And even though I didn't say this out loud to people, in my head, I was judgy of other parents. I thought, oh, in the stores, if I had a kid, you know, someday when I have kids, my child is never going to speak to me like that. You know, my kid's not going to have a tantrum in the middle of a grocery store, you know.
So I guarantee you, we've all said that.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know what we don't know, right?
We don't know what we don't know. And I thought, you know, and I think now, I think, gosh, it's almost karma that I had the kids I had. And I had kids who were not just tantruming, but were just full on melting down in the grocery store. I had to, more than once, I would have to leave a full cart of something in the store and walk out with my kids. And there were many people in my circles who were having kids at the same time. And, you know, they were such better parents. They could create a child who behaved, who said please and thank you, and for the most part behaved so well, yet I couldn't. And I looked like the goofball who didn't know what she was doing. In fact, I was even told by professionals that it's hard to have four kids. My husband advised me. He said, when I would complain to him every time, you know, oh, I can't believe so-and-so said this. I can't believe so-and-so looked like they thought this, you know, about my parenting. I complained to my husband all the time. And he finally said, hey, look, those people are not going to someday come back to you. They're not going to look you up and find you and say, you know, way back in the year 2003 or, you know, whatever, I was wrong. You were right. They're never going to do that. So he said, you have to rectify this yourself. This is not about those people. And he was right. You have to get rid of your ego in order to function as an effective caregiver. Let those people think you are not a good caregiver, whether you're a dad, a mom, whatever the title is, let them think that you're just not qualified for that job. And instead, use that energy, use those thoughts that you could be directing toward those people, use those to help your person. And it's easier said than done, but I used to do these little silly techniques. They're really silly, but we say silly things in our head all the time, right? We say things, for example, like, I'm never going to get better. We actually believe I'm never going to get better in certain parts, you know, of our journey. And that's a silly thought. We are going to get better.
We are our thoughts, right? we have to have positive thinking because we are our thoughts.
Right.
But I want to hear your silly things.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, just silly little things. Like, one of the things I used to do was I would answer them behind my lips. I mean, that's really goofy. Another one, let's think. Another one was, I saw people as just giving their opinions to me. So when they said, your kids get away with too much, I would, before answering, I would pause, and you have to kind of inhale and exhale there and pause. And you have to, and I thought, I would rephrase what they said. I would think, my opinion is you let your kids get away with too much. So I did that for so many people. When they would say something to me, I would rephrase it in my head, and it would go, it would come out, you know, my opinion is, because I thought, I adopted this idea that I am not emotionally attached to other people's opinions of my opinions. So when I could detach myself a little bit there, that helped. Another thing I did that was kind of silly, but it absolutely worked, was I did a whole bunch of visualization. And in my book, I have a whole list of, there's a whole chapter on the strategies, specific visualizations I did. And I visualized people as part of a story, a life story, characters in a story. And I thought, okay, for example, the grocery store clerk, that's one of the stories I tell about the grocery store clerk who really, I think she just couldn't stand me and she couldn't stand my kids. But I think she had some issues that maybe she needed to seek help for. And I thought, if she's just a minor character in my life story, she can come in and out of my life. And then maybe, who knows, maybe someday she's going to change also. Because in a story, the characters do change from time to time. And you never know what impact you're going to have on that person. You never know what they're going to experience down the road in their health journey. They may look back on your situation. They may not, you know, back on your situation and say, wow, I get it now. I did that a lot. But I thought, if that person, that grocery store clerk, is a minor character in my story and I'm the major character, I'm going to allow for forgiveness. Let her think what she wants. And I just did just a whole bunch of visualization. You know, I am that all-terrain vehicle going through my life with my kids when other mothers seem to float through just fine. I am an ultra parent. That's one of the things I adopted too. I was talking with another mom. In this case, this mother's son had autism, but I was talking with another mom, and we were talking about how extreme our parenting was for our kids, what we had to go through. And she said, it is like extreme sports. That's what this is. It's not normal parenting. And I agreed. And that stuck with me. And I thought, you know, if I had to classify the type of parent that I am or was, it would be as an ultra parent. And that has a different ring to it. I didn't name the book ultra caregiver. That it didn't have the same ring, but it still qualifies, you know, because when you think of yourself as an ultra performer, for example, in athletics, an ultra runner, ultra whatever, if you think of somebody who is kind of a leader, and you think of somebody who is fortified, somebody who's strong, but they also went through a whole bunch to get to that level.
Yes.
And it's almost by choice, you know, as opposed to an extreme, you know, bizarre, extreme caregiver. So changing, reframing how I saw situations and how I saw the people in my circles made all the difference. And looking back, my husband was right. Not a single person came back to me and said, I remember that incident. And boy, you're a good parent. Not a single person, but it doesn't matter because I don't need that. That's not the measure of my life. the measure of my life with my kids is that they are healthy and happy. They are living the life that is now full, thanks to everything that we did to help them get through their Lyme and get through all their medical adversities.
Thanks to all that bad parenting, right, that you did. Yes. To get them where they are now. Yes, you're right. And we don't, you know, we all like validation, but we don't need it. The only validation we need is when we're home within our home and our family, our spouse, our children, whoever it may be that you're taking care of. We only need to be responsible for those people and what those people think, right? There's always that phrase of, it's what other people think of me is none of my business. And it's really not. But like you said, it's hard. It's not easy, you know? And I like the one where you said you kind of talk under your voice, right? Because I think during this journey, journaling and saying things out loud can sometimes help us. And so maybe you really wanted to tell that lady to shove it, right? But you can't. So get in the car and say, okay, Tammy, you know, I think you should just shove it. Not saying that's a good idea, but hey, sometimes things work, right? But yes, absolutely. And that is tough. That I was recently talking to, actually, I think it might have been a guest on my show, where he was getting some financial help from some of his family to get treatment. And then the treatment didn't work, right? Then he kind of felt like a failure because I took their money to do something that didn't work. You know, we're only doing what we think is best for us. We can't be that number two person, right? Where, hey, this worked for me, it's going to work for you and everybody else. Because unfortunately, that's not the way this disease works. If it did, we would all be better so much faster, right? There's just not a one answer other than, and I will say this, other than start at that foundation. Build your foundation, right? Build your gut, build your foundation, remove toxicity. And a lot of it starts there. Well, all of it does start there. But other than that, there's no one journey that works for everyone. So this is why, you know, I love this podcast because I have people from all walks of life that share their journey and things that worked for them that may or may not work for the listeners, but here it is. Yeah. Take it or leave it, right? Give it a try, experiment, because so many things we do are kind of trial and error along this journey because we don't have that Lyme cure 101 for dummies, right? It's just not there. So, well, those are really great tips on how to manage that. Because again, you know, what people think shouldn't be any of our business, but I think it's human nature to be affected in one way or another when somebody judges you for either your parenting or whatever it may be, you know, they just think that you didn't tell your child no enough or say no loud enough, right? Because most children that will work for, but we're all different. That's the beauty of the world is there's different people, different personalities, different illnesses that are going on that people don't even know about or don't realize. And so this has just been a fabulous show and you have shared so many amazing things that, you know, I think sometimes many of us get Lyme disease in our head is maybe that's what I have. It's by word of mouth, people talking, running into somebody, the grocery store at, you know, the waitress at the restaurant, and just all these little things. So maybe somebody out there knows somebody who has a child who has a lot of similarities of one or all three of your children, right? That's how we get to figure out that just knowledge is powerful. Never quit learning ever.
Right. Well said. I totally agree.
And that is awesome. Oh, thank you. Anna, I truly can't thank you enough. I appreciate you. And I love that I now know why you call your book Ultra parent thinking. Yeah. I like that. I like that word. So we will have the title of your book in the description of your episode so the listeners can check it out, assuming it's available on Amazon.
Well, it was. I pulled it off of Amazon yesterday. My goal for 2025 is it's actually on a Shopify store, alterparentthinking.com. I have a website, alterparentthinking.com. You can Google alterparentthinking, it'll pop up. But it's only right now selling on my Shopify store, but you can find it really easily. Super easy.
Perfect. Then I will put that link in your description. I'm glad I asked that. There was a reason I asked that. Normally I don't. I just assume it's on Amazon. So for the listeners, I will share with them the way that they can get it, because it sounds like it's a fantastic book for just anyone, and maybe even especially new moms, right? They're young moms.
Good point.
I'm kind of thinking it might be a great tool for them. So, and again, tools we want to learn. And so I appreciate you putting that out. I appreciate you just being that ultra parent for your children and never gave up on them and never listened to the naysayers and went with your gut and knew that, you know, we learn our bodies along this journey, and we know what our kids are like, and we know what they're not like. And so that's part of being a parent. And kudos to you, because it sounds like you're an amazing one.
Tanya, I really appreciated this time together and everything you said, and for your leadership. I would not be able to get this far without people like you paving the way. So thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you. It absolutely takes a village for all of this. So I'm glad to have you in my village.
Yay. Thank you. Likewise.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.